Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I guess I forgot to set up an intro, but welcome to the International Artist Roundtable discussion. I am opening the doors for you, the independent underground artists and service providers, to the artists who come on the air with me today and share your thoughts and concerns around, you know, the struggles or even the triumphs of what it takes to be an independent underground artist. And you know, what you've experienced to what you, where you would like to go, you know, anything that you want to put on the table, you are welcome to. The number is 347-857-1189, and I welcome anybody, you know, to come in and join me on this conversation today. We had an amazing experience back in August with the first attempt that we had. It was actually turned into an international roundtable. We had Chameleon calling in from Switzerland, Jace from Black Stacks here in Seattle, my hometown, John, an amazing singer-songwriter, musician out of Detroit, and Chandrine from Canada, amazing poet, independent writer, and TC, who is my mentor, and he works with artists around their business plans and being focused and all of that. So I'm hoping some of the people that were on the last show, which was, I believe, August 23rd, will call back in. But I welcome new callers to come and chime in and share, you know, in this time for you to have your say and maybe problem solve around some issues that you're feeling are going on. But in the meantime, as I'm waiting for callers to come in, let me just play some tracks. If you know how I do it, I play tracks from a variety of artists right here in the Pacific Northwest. And I'm going to start this out with one of my favorite tracks that will kind of help set the tone for at least me. This is I Love My Life by Black Stacks, featuring their lead singer, Felicia Loud. again, welcome to the international, I'm calling it international since our first session was international, the International Artist Roundtable. This is where you can come, you know, and put your thoughts and feelings, opinions on the table and share them with other people, you know, and find out how people in other parts of the country and the world think about, you know, what you have to say. You know, maybe we can do some problem solving and networking. It was absolutely amazing with the first, you know, roundtable. Very, very diverse group of artists. And then TC, I would call TC also an artist, but, you know, he's kind of more of the business mind. You know, he'll put the hard questions to you. He doesn't sugarcoat things. So, again, I hope that, you know, TC will call in. I know that Chameleon said that he had to work and wouldn't be able to call. Jace is with his wife celebrating her birthday, but he's hoping to call in later on. I believe that John will be calling in from Detroit again. I know that he really, really appreciated the conversation that took place last time. I do have a caller, so let me bring them in. Caller from the 404, you're on the air with Lady Flava on the Artist Roundtable. Welcome.
Hi, ladies. Elizabeth.
Hey, how are you, darling?
Hi, honey.
very nice to actually hear your voice.
Yeah.
I wasn't. Isn't 404 Atlanta area code or no?
It's the Atlanta area code. I have dual residence. Basically, I have a home in Atlanta, and I conduct business out of there as well as Tampa.
Okay. Okay, so Elizabeth, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell people who you are and what you do.
Okay, well, I am CEO of LaRue Entertainment, Inc. I also manage Juan LaRue, which his stage name is known as LaRue, and Intellectual will also be coming under my management as well. Basically, I manage. We have a lot of things jumping off. We have a record label that's on the table right now that's ready to sign, a tour in London coming in the spring for LaRue and Intellectual, and we're excited. A lot of good things are happening. So.
All right. So I'll just give you a little brief rundown. I can't even talk. Elizabeth is kind of new to my world. She and I have Juan LaRue in common. He's here in Seattle and is an artist that I've come to know and love and respect dearly. I've worked with him, you know, myself up here in Seattle. And so can I just ask you, Elizabeth, are the two of you related?
Yes, he is my cousin.
Okay. Because I'm like, okay.
LaRue. Family, right?
Yeah. It can't be, like, too common of a name. So, I think that's
LaRue related.
Okay. Yeah, I see you popping up with all kinds of LaRues over there, but it was just like, okay, should I just assume that they're related because they have the same last name? So, when you call yourself a manager, Elizabeth, what does that actually mean? What is it that you actually do for instance, LaRue?
Actually, we take care of everything that if an unsigned artist needs a manager, and the key word here is it should be recording artist. You have to record something in order to get management. I take care of everything for him, booking, travel arrangements, signing, everything. You name it across the gamut. Whatever the record label does, once they are signed, we do that before they get signed. And then sometimes, you know, a lot of the pressure is alleviated off of us after the signing because then the record label takes on that responsibility. So at that point, we just basically manage them between the record label and the artist. We are basically the liaison.
Okay. So... tell me this. I mean, I know that LaRue is family.
Yes.
But, you know, one thing that I'm learning in the years that I've been involved, you know, with artists, you know, people that I called friends aren't necessarily the easiest people to work with when it comes to being an artist.
Uh-huh.
But So when it comes to family, I have to believe, but I'll put this to you. You have to have some form of passion and belief that LaRue is worth the time and energy, that it's not just a family thing, that it goes above and beyond that. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I do have artists, other artists in my family, based out of New York and New Jersey, that I have absolutely cut loose of my management because of their lack of discipline, their lack of work ethic is just not there. Lyrically, they're not there. They're not even ready yet to obtain that. So it doesn't break the bonds of family, but at the same time, you know, my family being in this industry for over 5 decades and 3 generations, they have to understand that, you know, there's a lot that comes with it, you know.
Yeah.
Financial responsibility as well. You know, all this doesn't, I mean, you know, videos and concert tours and, you know, basic things that are needed for an artist come out of most of the time, 99% of the time, out of the manager's pocket. So just because we're family doesn't mean that, you know, that's an automatic, you know, gimme, so to speak.
Right.
You know, it's a fine line, but at the same time, you know, me and LaRue have bumped some heads, you know, and it's okay. But eventually we will work it out. It has to be a compromise.
Right.
But the bottom line
right.
is he does have last say so as an artist.
Okay. So tell me this. What is it, what would it take, you know, for an artist to be able to step to you and even have a discussion around you managing them? What is it that you look for?
I look at their music first. I look at their music, and that will tell me a lot about their character, their work ethic. Being in this business for so many years and growing up literally in the business, it pretty much comes easy to me. Not all managers are good managers. Not all artists are great artists. So I look for a lot in lyrically, if I could relate to it, because me and my cousin come from varied backgrounds, that just makes me, makes me good at what I do.
Right.
You know, I have to be able to relate to it. If I can't relate to it, then the Hispanic is not going to relate to it. The Asian is not going to relate to it. And as you know, my mantra is, you know, you got to think global, not hood. You know, if you're just looking
exactly.
in your own backyard for exposure, you're not going to go anywhere. You know, the world is so much bigger.
Exactly. That's one thing, and I appreciate you bringing that up because, you know, there are a lot of people out here. I think you kind of, you know, can see that from my postings, Elizabeth, on Facebook. There are a lot of people that are claiming to be managers, you know, and I try to put it to them, what does that actually mean? You know, because I've had people say, oh, I'm managing so-and-so or whatever, Lady Flavor, can I, you know, send you some tracks and have them heard on your shows or whatever? And I'm like, sure, okay, send me, you know, first of all, radio-friendly tracks, because if you want to get on the radio, the reality is it needs to be radio-friendly. I did do a show recently where I allowed some verbiage to be, you know, creatively shared. It's not tracks that I'll probably ever play again, but I did that for a particular reason, and purpose for these artists. So I don't have any regrets around that. But, you know, the reality is if you want to be heard on mainstream radio, even college radio, and you know, on some online radio stations, you need to have radio-friendly tracks. When I send out tracks to the different stations and this and that, that's what they require, so that I require that. A lot of artists don't have that. They don't have radio-friendly tracks ready and available. The other thing is the manager doesn't even know what an EPK is. And I'm like, okay, if you are a manager, you know, there's some certain terminologies and things that you need to have an understanding what it is. And so this one, it comes down to, you know, doing your homework. Sandrine, who is in the chat room right now, she is big on researching and doing her homework. You know, so I can trust that if she puts a post up, if she writes a blog, you know, or an article for the Examiner, that, you know, she's done her research. And I know that, you know, what she's stating is fact from what she found out. But let me take another call, Elizabeth. Somebody else wants to join us on the August Roundtable. All right, is this Jace from Black Stacks?
Yes, indeedy.
All right, you're on the air with... I'm good. You're on the air with myself and Miss Elizabeth, who is LaRue's manager.
How you doing, Miss Elizabeth, LaRue's manager?
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
So this is Jace from Black Stacks. LaRue performs a lot with Black Stacks, so.
Yes, I've heard the music. I enjoy it a lot. I know you're under management, so I won't even go there.
you might be shocked that we are not under management, but that's okay.
It's all good.
No, they do a lot of the work themselves, actually, Elizabeth, but they do have a publicist that does a lot of work for them, Blue Shoes. And then they've got, you know, this person that's called the artist cheerleader that does a lot of work for them, too.
That's good. That's really good. Gotta love the hookup.
So Jace, did you hear the conversation that I was having with Elizabeth around management and what it is that she looks for as far as being able to sign an artist?
I think I caught the back end of that conversation where you were talking about if you don't feel it, if it's not global, if it's just in your backyard type hood music and it can't go any further than that, then it's something that you're not really looking at. And, you know, I was over here nodding my head to that, but that's about it. I didn't hear too much more of the conversation outside of that.
Well, that's kind of the gist, and it's one of the things that, you know, you and I have had a conversation around a gentleman that I'm hoping will call into one of our shows and join us on the Artist Roundtable. That's Miles Anthony from Righteous Media Music. And, you know, when I interviewed him, out of New York, you know, one of the things that he said, for him to sign an artist, he has to have a passion. He has to know that he can sell that artist, and that artist is something, mm-hmm. somebody that can go global. He said that there was an artist that he turned down because, he didn't feel it. You know, it wasn't mm-hmm. something he personally and professionally could push, so he turned it down. That artist did go on to, another company for management and has done some really big things. And I asked him, you know, do you have regrets in that? And he says no, because he knows that he could not have represented that artist. And I think that's something that, you know, like since we're talking about recording artists right now, that you need to be able to recognize, you know, and understand when it comes to management, that person basically has to really believe in you, believe in what you're creating, be able to convincingly sell you, you know, to the record label, to the different showcases and venues, promote you, you know, to those people and places that, you know, the bigger doors can open up. And so I totally understand and appreciate what you shared, Elizabeth, because it makes sense to me. There's a lot of people that are getting these friends or family members that are saying, oh, I'll manage you, you know, and they don't know what that means.
It's a lot. It's a lot of pressure. I mean, especially if you're in my family, because it is a lot of pressure because we have so many that have succeeded. The oldest one that is absolutely, you know, still living and touring, and in her, I'm gonna say she's probably in her 70s. Is Dee Dee Sharp?
Mm.
And Dee Dee Sharp is one of the first. The rest of us basically have passed away, but she is still living, still touring in Europe at this moment. So, you know, it runs in our genes, but like, you know, it goes unsaid. This has to be something that I personally believe in. I've turned down at least 6 artists in the last week. Before that, it was 5. So, and this week already, you know, I've came up to 2. So, I don't mind screening music, you know, because I know where they're getting around to is, you know, when they ask me to screen their music and You know, does it need to be tweaked, or, you know, is it lyrically, you know, strong? And, you know, not to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's just, it is what it is, and I'm going to come at you correctly because the next person is going to be, you know, it might not be so friendly, and, you know, it, like I said, it is what it is. I have to feel it. I personally have to feel that.
I have a question. I'm sorry. I thought you were done. We must be delayed.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask a question because, you know, you talk about, you know, fulfilling, you know, your requirements as an artist and blah, blah, blah. What is the biggest turnoff for a manager when approached by artists? Like, what would be the thing that would draw the first red flag, if even before the music, so to speak? What would be something that? And I'm just asking this question because I think it's a question that particularly in this area these guys need to know. And I think, you know, they also need to know, you know, what to look for in a manager, you know, because
right.
You know, like Flavor said, a lot of times they just go to their homie, you know, go to their
mm-hmm.
friend, or
mm-hmm.
and they don't really know. So that was just, you know, a question I had.
The biggest turnoff is overhypedness. They're too eager to get my attention and to shove it in my face. Just a polite, you know, can you just check this out? And that's enough, you know, and I will do that before anybody tries to ram it down my throat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the biggest turnoff to me. And within the first 30 seconds, even after the intro, I would give you another 30 seconds. So that's a whole minute on a track, which is a long time for one manager to sit there and listen and screen track after track after track. You know, I've had somebody send me 14 CDs of show video, their tracks, their pictures. It was insane. And this is just one artist.
Right.
You know, and that is like, you know, you can't possibly expect me, you know, like I'm a very busy woman. It's impossible. It's insane sometimes. When I ask you to send me one track, a sample, that's all I need, is a sample of your best that you think that will take you, you know, someplace, your best track. That's what I expect. I want one track. That doesn't mean a whole album, you know. And that's it right there.
Well, what area are you in, please? What area you're in?
Physically? Yeah, physically.
I'm based out of Tampa right now. We're looking to move. I'm probably looking to move to Miami next year. I plan on to head up my other cousin Coco LaRue, who is worldwide known as on her PR team.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to stop doing and running the entertainment company, you know, so to speak. I am very good at multitasking.
I hear that. I know that's right. So it sounds like you only deal with LaRue artists. They got to have a LaRue in their name.
No, that's not true. Like I said, Intellectroy is going to be coming under my management. He will be touring with us in London.
Right.
So, you know, I am looking for artists now. I do have another family member that's going to take over the hip-hop side, so to speak. He will be helping me out because I do need a second hand because, you know, it is growing outside of LaRue. And in Intellectroy, we just happen to be the first one that's not family, but we will also be accepting management for R&B artists and groups as well come the new year.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. You got a good artist. You got a good, young, hungry artist who works hard out here, So it's good. That's good to hear. I'm glad to hear he has somebody who has a passion, who has the knowledge, who has the connection, who has the know-how, who can multitask and work with him. That's very good to hear. So it's good to meet you through this artist round table.
I appreciate it. It's nice meeting you, too. Hopefully we will run into each other soon.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely.
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another caller on the line. They didn't raise their hand, but I'm going to just click on them and just see if they're listening or if they're wanting to chime in. Okay, let's see if I can click on them. Okay, caller from the 253, you're on the air with Jace from Black Stacks and Elizabeth from LaRue Entertainment. Did you want to speak or did you want to just listen? Uh-oh, I must have scared them off. They hung up. If you're calling from the 253, call back. I'll leave you on mute so you don't have to actually talk. You can just listen. I know that Lady Blue from Pennsylvania, is in the chat room. Lady Blue, you're welcome to call in if you want to share your thoughts on, being involved with artists and spoken word artists and working with youth around writing poetry. Sandrine, you definitely are welcome to call back from Canada in the chat room. I know I'm a scary woman, sauce, and I try not to be, but, some people just like, ooh, I don't know what that woman's issue is. But anyway, we've got a couple guests in the chat room. Guests, you're welcome to also call in. The call-in number is 347-857-1189. We'd love to hear your thoughts around, what we're dealing with. Okay, the 253 did call back. 253, if you're wanting to actually come on the air and talk, please just hit the one and raise your hand. Otherwise, I'll leave you on mute, and I don't want to scare you off again. So, we got a raised hand. Okay, here we go. All right, 253, you're on the air with Jason Blackstacks and Elizabeth from LaRue Entertainment. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've just been listening to you guys, and wow, you really got some big things going on. That's great.
So tell me who this is that's calling.
This is Josh Parkerson from Lynx Records.
Oh, Josh, my new frowned friend.
Yeah, that's right.
I finally figured out who you were, because I was like, my kids and I were like, who is this man in all these pictures at your birthday party, Mom? I was like, I have absolutely no idea. And then I noticed you were, commenting on my stuff on Facebook, and I still didn't put two and two together until I actually clicked on your picture. And then on top of that, I didn't know that you were affiliated with Lynx Records. So welcome to the Artist Roundtable, Josh. I appreciate you calling in.
You.
So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do and how you're affiliated with Lynx Records.
Well, again, my name is Josh Parkerson. I'm VP of Operations for Lynx Records. I'm the number two in charge, basically. I'm affiliated with Lynx Records because, I was an artist too. And back in the day, about 10 years ago, I was signed as an artist. So I kind of know the business side and also know, the artist struggles as well. So I just figured I'd chime in here and see if I can contribute.
Well, I'm sure you definitely can contribute. So what is your actual role? What is it that you do for Lynx Records?
Well, what I do is I do most of the business stuff. So, for example, right now we're doing this Adopt-A-Teacher program. Let's see, a couple months ago I have some political connects, and so I called up Senator Pam Roach, and we did a photo shoot and a video shoot with her so she can kind of help us out, and we can kind of scratch her back, she can scratch ours kind of deal. I set up shows, we set up music conferences, I kind of get out in the community, get out in the clubs, see, what clubs are doing good, what songs are kind of reaching the actual, the people, I do a lot of things. I'm kind of like a jack of all trades. Even though I'm on the business side, I write music, all sorts of stuff, make beats, So I'm kind of all over. Even though I am VP of operations, I like to be involved in everything. I really enjoy the creative process, of making music, of making beats, of writing things, of critiquing. I'm real big on critiquing and make sure that, every single syllable in this song you can hear and, sounds good. And so that's kind of what I do.
So how many artists do you actually have signed with Lynx Records?
Well, we have two artists right now that are signed. Currently, we're looking at a country artist, and right now I'm kind of scouting out for some rock artists,
okay.
rock bands.
Okay.
So right now we have two. And, you know, we get packages all the time. You know, tons and tons of people want, you know, to be affiliated or, you know, be signed because we have a reputation of doing things on a certain, you know, level of quality. We're not afraid to invest in ourselves, you know, and that's where I think a lot of artists, you know, I think that's where they go wrong in a lot of times because, you know, everybody wants the free ride,
mm-hmm.
you know. They don't want to put in the work. For example, I was just talking about mixtapes to a couple of my friends, right? And they're really, really talented. But here's the thing, is all they want to do is be on mixtapes because they just want to show somebody, you know, hey, I did a song, I did three or four songs, and, yo, it's good. But the thing is that's not a good means to an end. If you want to get signed, you know, you have to show the people who have the money that you're not afraid to invest in yourself. You need to write an album. And once you have an album and it's mixed and it's mastered and it's pressed and you got SoundScan and DBS, you know, and you're copyrighted and you got all of your ducks in a row, then if you get on a mixtape or something like that, then it's fine because you're already somewhat established.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you already have something that you can sell that's already in stores. And so if you use a mixtape as a promotional thing to promote your album or promote your brand, then I don't have any problem with that. But what I was talking to my friends about is just that, is you have to, you know, get something tangible. That's not a mixtape. That's not somebody else's stuff. You know, if you want to get signed and you want to be the next Drake or whomever, you know, you have to raise your game up. You know, don't settle for less, which is what I think a lot of artists in the Northwest are doing. They're settling
yep.
for less.
Yep. Can I chop in real quick? Because I'm not going to be on this line too much longer, Flavor. But Josh and Elizabeth have really made my day. Because I think a lot of times what happens is, you know, especially here in the Northwest, the artists are so busy trying to find what bandwagon to jump on, find what is working in other places, and mimic it. And we've lost this thing of originality and creativity. And I
mm-hmm.
like what you're saying because Elizabeth was talking about more about how, you know, as a manager, she's looking to find an artist that she can relate to that can not only be good in their hood, but good in the global community.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause,
you know, music is a worldwide language. So it speaks
Absolutely.
To people in places that people don't even sometimes feel. So while you're sitting at home and you're worrying about satisfying your boy on the block, what about that teacher that's in the classroom with those students that can have the same effect? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That loves music too. You know, when I
and
when you hear Josh talk, he's talking about how you utilize something once you've already established something, as opposed to trying to utilize Biggie's beat to make myself known. Why don't I establish who I am so then when I come across, when I come across a Biggie beat and I'm doing something over Biggie's beat, people aren't going, oh, he's remaking Biggie's song. It's Jace is now Biggie track. I think these are the type of conversations. I'm so proud to be a part of it and listen in and chime in, but I think these are the conversations and the dialogue that people need to hear, these artists need to hear, so they can hear from the record companies, they can hear from the management entertainment companies, they can hear from
mm-hmm.
the people that are putting the music on the radios, because it's very
right.
important for them to understand that creativity, originality, and
mm-hmm.
life and passion is valued, you know?
Yeah.
There's no easy way out. You either have to establish something or you will fall for anything. And I just wanted to say that because they just sparked me. They really made me feel good today. I have to get off this phone because I have some other prior engagements. But it was a pleasure to hear you, Josh and Elizabeth. As always, Flavor, you know how I feel about you. Please continue on with such a strong, strong conversation and a real conversation. And hopefully I'll be linking with Josh soon and Elizabeth soon, and continuing on. And I just wanted to say thank you again, Flavor, for opening it up and having this conversation because it's needed.
Before you get off the air, Jay, one of the reasons why I kind of started this, the Artist Roundtables, is, you know, Jason and I have at least biweekly powwows on the phone. And a lot of the conversation that he and I have, along with, you know, myself and other artists from across the world, are kind of along the same lines in some fashion. And I said to Jace, you know, why not do it on the air? Where, you know, the artists can come together and have this conversation. It's one thing for me and Jace to have a conversation. How far does that actually go? What do we resolve? But if we can open up the doors and put it on the table for other people to chime in, then maybe we can come to a resolve, a resolution. And so, this kind of stems from you too, Jace, you know, me starting this show. And so I kind of appreciate you, kind of being a part of the catalyst that fueled me to set this up. So I know you need to go and take care of your business. And again, happy birthday to your wife.
Thank you very much. I'm sure she'll be very spoiled today.
Well, and she should be. All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Peace.
All right, man. Well, nice talking to you.
All right. So now it's just Elizabeth from LaRue Entertainment out of Tampa, Florida, and Josh from Lynx Records out of Tacoma, Washington. And so I appreciate the two of you, you know, calling in, because this kind of helps, you know, like Jace was saying, you know, for especially recording artists to hear, you know, what it is that the record labels and the management, the real managements. I know I say this all the time, real managements, because there's just too many people claiming titles that they really can't produce. It's not something that they're honestly really doing. And so I'm so glad to actually know who you are now, Josh. Yeah, you've been a topic of conversation, you know, since my birthday. Like, who's this man's face? And then, honestly, I figured it out yesterday who you were.
Awesome. Who is this guy who thinks he knows everything? What is this?
Yeah. I appreciate you. Okay.
I'm gonna make a point here right quick. You know what? I missed on something here that I think is extremely important. Through this whole process, I hear artists always say, when I ask them, well, why do you want management? And the first words out of their mouth is, because I want a multi-million-dollar record deal.
Yeah. Those things don't happen anymore.
You know? And I'm like, wow, okay. I had to think on that, like, okay, Adam, you know, do you realize that this is a process? Nobody just wakes up overnight and becomes, you know, it's a process. You don't become a millionaire overnight. Those things are very rare. Justin Bieber is very rare. You know, these type of things, you know, this YouTube is very rare. In the real world, it really doesn't happen, you know. Hollywood doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. It takes years, and some artists never get signed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing is if their music, if the artist's music, and I want them to pay attention, if your music can be endorsed by radio DJs that are FM, syndicated radio, and promoters worldwide that are, you know, that are at your door and saying, you know what, we want a tour. We want your artist to tour in Japan, in London, in Germany. Then you know it's their time. It's their time, and it's well worth it. But you have to get those kind of endorsements. You have to. It's a must. Just because you float your own boat doesn't mean that you're great.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was great. Don't y'all want to sign me?
And
I think
you
I need
are.
A manager.
And
I'm going to learn how to sing. I was going to, you know, take some lessons from, you know, Real and Tap Tap. You know, Vox kind of scared me with the red eye. So I think I might stay away from Vox.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's good to know. Mm-hmm. It's good to know because, you know, a lot of these artists now, they want to make a record label and haven't recorded nothing. They got million-dollar studios and haven't recorded anything that's worth listening to. So they got this process all backwards. Everybody now owns a record label. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, are you kidding me? What? Are you kidding me? I can't believe it sometimes. You know, where did our values go? Where did our music and our artistic flavor go throughout this process? You know,
well, I think I might have an answer to that one. I might have an answer to the where did the music go?
Really would like to know.
Well, right. Well, and this is my theory. We are a culture of instant gratification. Okay. And that's where a lot of these things stem from. That's where a lot of these, even if they're good artists and they're super talented, they just want it instantly. They want it right now. They, you know, and I'm just thinking, you know, go watch Behind the Music. You know, go see about, you know, Ludacris. How many 10,000, 30,000 CDs he had to sell out of his trunk?
Yeah, exactly.
Just to get on the map? You know, that's a dedication. You know, just because
right,
you go out once every 2 weeks, right, just because you go out once every 2 weeks to a club doesn't mean you're dedicated to your craft. You know, that's not the same thing. You know, so they see, you know, the quick ways, you know, but the quick ways never really pan out. You know, the shortcuts never really work. They don't. You have to actually put in the work. You have to hit the streets. You got to promote. You know, you have to make sure that their music is on a certain level. You cannot be seen as just a local artist because there's too many out there. There's too many local artists out there. Like for us, for example, you were talking about Europe and everything like that, right? Well, you know, we're on iTunes and all of those Rhapsody and blah blah blah, right? And so we're huge in Japan and Australia and Europe. And, you know, I mean, we cash the checks, right? And, you know, I love the idea of touring in Europe and all that stuff. I mean, I think that's a great idea. I mean, I really do.
It is.
Okay,
Europeans are more open. They're more open to whatever music. If you notice that a lot of the people that you hear, their music hits first over there in Europe before anybody really notices them and pays attention to them in the U.S., you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that, not all the time, in most case scenarios, independent labels get not so much of a good rap. We actually do a whole lot, you know.
Yeah.
The rule is being signed to an independent label with distribution. So
yeah.
That is one of the biggest things that we look for is their ability to promote him, their ability to distribute, their ability to hold my ground as well as his.
Right.
You know? So,
right.
Because once we get in bed together, we are now a team, baby, and that's all there is to it. We are a team. We are in this thick and thin to the end of the contract. So it is what it is.
Well, I don't mean to cut you off, but there's another caller. I just want to see if by chance this particular caller wants to chime in on the conversation. Caller from the, I can't see, 586 area code. You're on the air with Josh from Lynx Records and Elizabeth from LaRue Entertainment.
Okay, then. This is John D. Green, Sr. How are you? How are you?
I'm good.
Hey,
how are you?
Good. How are you? I am well. I am well.
That's good.
Thank you so much. Have you been listening, John?
No, actually, I just chimed in. I saw the lineup, and I tried to make it back as quick as I could. So what did I miss?
Okay, so we are on the air. Jace was on briefly, but he had to leave. Today is his wife's birthday, so he's off celebrating with her. But we are on the line with Elizabeth LaRue from LaRue Entertainment. She's a management company out of Tampa, Florida. And then we are also on the air with Josh from Lynx Records, which is based out of Tacoma, Washington here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and John, why don't you introduce yourself to Elizabeth and Josh?
How are you both? Good to meet you, verbally at least. I heard a bit of your conversation and your exchanges back and forth. That was, you had a lot to say. I see that, especially about the part about one promoting himself and going to the club once a week doesn't make you, dedicated to your craft. I like that.
Correct.
I am a singer-songwriter out of Michigan, and I attended the first round table where the topic was artists and how to better artists, how to better get heard, and how to better promote our wares, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And between that time and this time, there is so much I have to tell you. I think I've stumbled onto one of the keys of independent. I'm an indie artist, by the way. I have as a matter of fact, Lady Flavor, I have a contract sitting in front of me.
Do you? Oh, how exciting, Don.
I have a contract sitting in front of me. And it's funny, after all this time and all this work, I think it is my opinion that your team, as you said earlier, ma'am, your team has a lot to do with the direction that you go in, the cohesiveness of your team, if you all are on the same page. I have a very small team, a very small promo team, very well-trusted team. But it's a small team, and a lot of the accomplishments that I've made from then till now, I thank my team for that.
Yeah.
My team consists of four people. I mean, as you know, Lady Flavor, my wife, Donna. Also, my main two people are my wife and Elizabeth Finn. We all call her Liz. Our Facebook friends, Liz. They're the main people of my team. And between them, I've been able to reach out to people and in directions that I would not have thought to do on my own. I mean, that's I have no pride issues in saying that's not my strong suit.
Mm-hmm.
But because I am a musician, a lot of times we get caught up in that thinking that we got all the answers because, hey, we make the music that the people want to hear. Okay, that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
But without the people to listen to that music, you're just, well, and you know me, Lady Flavor, my saying is, without the fans, we're just playing with ourselves. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I mean,
I know it sounds coarse, but it's a fact. Without the fans, we're playing with ourselves. So my discovery from the last roundtable was a lot of it had to do with the networking of my team. They got out there and reach different people and what, and then of course, you know, a lot of it has to do with being able to deliver. You know, you can have a grand audience, but when it comes time to do what you do, can you do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you deliver? And that played a big, big part in the way things have developed for me from then till now. So
let me just chime in here right quick, John and Elizabeth and Josh. And, you know, I came to meet John, you know, on Facebook. I believe that he came to me, in a sense, by way of Brian O'Neill, a very accomplished indie artist, jazz musician out of Detroit also. But, you know, the thing that I appreciate about John is he's an artist that has heart. You know, he's got an amazing talent. But he has a heart, and he really cares. And if you listen to his words, he really creates something, a story, a visual, a feeling that draws you in and, you know, allows you to feel emotions in a safe way. You know, and the thing that I also appreciate about John is he doesn't have a problem sharing, you know, his disappointments in something, whether it be himself or others. And in acknowledging that, I think that one of the things that we did talk about on the last show was, you know, John and Chameleon and Jace is, you know, sometimes as artists, they don't necessarily have the tools, the business sense. And, you know,
so. That's so correct.
So Elizabeth and Josh, maybe we could speak on that too. Like, okay, there's a person out there who is an absolutely amazing creative soul. coming up with some great literature or beats or lyrics or sounds or whatever. Just amazing creative soul. But then they have just no understanding, comprehension of the business aspect if they're wanting to take it, you know, to the next level, mm-hmm. to where people are actually, you know, paying money to come see them, read them, you know, or mm-hmm. hear them. So what do you say? Because like John says, he's creating his little small team, you know, but at some point John's going to need more than that, you know, to get himself out there.
Right brain, left brain situation there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One side of the brain is known to be artistic. The other side is pretty much a business side. So there's a clear line there. Like you said, it's known, and mistake after mistake these artists will make is try to take care of their own business. To a certain extent, I give them that. They have handled it up to a certain point, but you got to recognize if they want to take it to another level, and most still, I'm not going to say, you know, I've never met an artist that said, well, no, this is enough for me, you know. Let's forget the record label signing, and let's forget the advancement on the second album, and let's forget this tour. I've never had an artist come up to me and say that.
You never will.
And so it takes somebody like me, you know, I do have the business sense. A lot of people are not personal outside their clique, you know, their city, because they are in their comfort zone. It's stupid when they step out of their comfort zone to talk to somebody from France or from Germany. May speak a different dialect that may, you know, hold the conversation a little bit differently. So that's what we're here to do. We, as managers and entertainment companies, have to be multilingual, just like artists do in their own way.
Mm-hmm. Well, now here's what I noticed though with that. When you get to a certain level, and I am not saying by any stretch of the imagination that I am at that level. Matter of fact, I just was able to go on the road, Lady Flavor. This will be especially interesting to you. I was able to go on the road with Sir Brian O'Neill. I just got home Saturday.
Okay,
you're talking about being humbled by someone's fame, someone who is, we know that the humanitarian efforts that man puts forth.
Right.
But I was able to witness the whole process, the business end as well as the creative end, ma'am, left side, right side, in full effect.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to go on tour. I was able to go on a concert with him. I was able to go on the road with him and see it firsthand, you know, because he's my mentor, pretty much. He's the person that's schooling me to the business end of what is. Well, that changes a lot of things about how you feel about yourself when you see someone that you aspire to be like do what they do, which is what you aspire to do well, especially when you consider them great at what they do. Now, I saw this man in full effect, and I was excited. I was happy. I was proud to be there. But I was also very humbled because there's a lot more that goes into it the bigger it gets and to be able to handle it all. But here's what I noticed. His management team, Kelly Adolph, and their whole management team, his image consultant, they were on the job. All right, they were there. They were the lockstep handling business from start to finish. Phones ringing, papers being signed, making meetings. It was a bit overwhelming because you know, like I said, I know what I can do. I know I can rock any crowd of any race anywhere at any time, but there is more to it. And I have to agree that you need the people that specialize in those areas. This is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And you need the people that specialize in that aspect. And I watched his management team, and it put a lot of things into perspective for me because, wow, you know, there's a lot more to it than just getting up on the mic and playing the piano. Sometimes you need that. I'm just fortunate that I have him to say, hey, you know what, come on the road with me. I need you to see this. And, boy, my little eyes, boy, I'll tell you what, it was something to it. because it's not like what we like to imagine or what we like to think it is, that, oh, you're the big star and you go up there and everything is done for you. No, not when it's done right. When it's done right,
yeah,
it's you and your management team. Say again, ma'am.
I think if Don, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think if they're humbled enough and their head is in the right place, they will be able to handle a lot of things as they come. Like I said, this is a process. So every time I take it one step further, I see the humbleness and I see the awe, like, wow, I love you so much. You totally rock. But that is my business. This is what I do. And just for artists to say, you know, if Def Jam or you know, Universal, any of these labels under that umbrella come at them, you know, with a one CD, a one single, not even a CD, but a one single or two single deal,
mm-hmm.
they think they hit the jackpot. And that's not key here. Key is longevity mm-hmm. in this business. Everybody, there's too many one-hit wonders out here that come a dime, a dozen, and are so ready to jump on the first thing swinging. You know, it's like, are you serious? You know, they're not going to promote you. Yeah, they might give you distribution, but they're definitely not going to promote you. Definitely not going to put money in your pocket. And you can forget about the touring. Unless you sell and go platinum, and that's a million copies. That is a lot of copies. And most of that comes back on the manager at all the time. All the time. We do everything. Even though, you know, Universal might sign them, it comes back to us, especially on these one, two track hits. You know, it's not worth it, because then you're going to need those contacts and everybody that you diss going up and say, yeah, Universal, Def Jam, find me, you know. They're going to feel a little chunked.
Before you got into management, ma'am,
were you a musician?
Uh-huh.
A musician? You are?
I used to be a musician, but I think you missed that time, that back end of the conversation. I grew up in this industry, literally.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's second nature. I just didn't jump in and say, you know what, I think I'll manage. No, it's pretty much in the book.
Okay, so.
It's something we can't get away from.
I asked you that question to ask you this question. Do you remember all the sacrifices? I'm sure you do. You probably think about it every day. It's something we'll never forget, any one of us that have embarked upon this journey. All the sacrifices and all the hours and all the work and all the recognition, but no gain, knowing. You remember that feeling?
I still do.
Now, do you remember the first time anything came across your plate after starving, struggling, and you remember that feeling?
Yeah, I did, but at the same time, that's where maturity comes in. That's where the manager comes in. If they are assigned,
yeah.
if they're going, you know, pretty much under management, that's where the
right.
maturity comes in. A 28-year-old, 20-something-year-old artist is not going to have the maturity to step back and say, you know what, I need to look at this contract before I start signing away my life, my rights, you know, and everything else that comes
mm-hmm.
with it, all my hard work for pennies on the dollar.
With
that
the management, you have someone to make that decision. You have someone to
no,
help you
No, we don't
through.
Make decisions. We advise. Don't make
you
decisions.
Advise.
Let's be clear
right.
about that. We do
well, you have someone
decisions.
To give good advice. A
I
lot of
have
these artists
me.
Don't.
Right. The
they
artist
have
always
you.
Has the last decision.
It's
me to persist and talk some sense into them and tell them the reason why we are turning down this label, and
yeah. I think
at the
you
big
are
picture
so
here.
You are so on point right now, because if you see now, I was an artist, to let you know, I was an artist for a while and I did pretty good and I was on Cube and I got to do the thing, you know. So I understand the struggles, and I understand when somebody throws you a cracker when you're starving, it's like the best cracker in the world, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's not always
–
it is.
Yeah, it
but
is.
That's,
okay.
That's not always, that's not always the thing that you want for longevity, like you were saying about the contracts. Well, if you don't have a manager or
mm-hmm.
some sort of management that knows about contracts or has a lawyer on retainer
mm-hmm. –
you know,
right.
you can get raked over the coals. Look at Alicia Keys. Alicia Keys, when she was young, she got signed and she got shelved for 4 years because of a bad contract, because she was so eager to sign that contract to get that $250,000 that she got shelved for 4 years. That means that everything she wrote, everything that she recorded from then, from that point before they own, and from everything from that point going forward they own for those 4 years. That means if you write this album and it's a hit, and it's like you just know it. I mean, like from jump to finish, it is just on point. You can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about, having good management. You know, a good manager is going to have your back, is going to go and look at every single word of that contract. Now, I have a business degree, and so that's why I'm in the business side. I love music. I love writing music and making beats and all that stuff, but I got a business degree so I can specifically deal with these things, you know, so I don't go into a situation ignorant like a lot of artists do. Now, that doesn't mean they're dumb. They just don't know.
I was one of them. Don't get me wrong.
You know, I mean, so I'm not trying to put anybody down, but that's the fact is if you've never been in a contract negotiation and you're sitting with Island Def Jam, please,
right.
who do you think owns the power?
Right.
Yeah,
I was definitely one of them.
It is a very powerful tool, but like I said, you know, when they come calling, and I see right off the bat that it's only a one-track deal, two-track deal, and, you know, pretty much it's one of those things where, and they have a lot of them that they do it all the time. A lot of labels are doing it. Yeah, just rock our label. You know, rock the label. We'll let you rock the label for 3 or 4 months to your, you know, see if it picks up. But guarantee there's no money going into the music video. There's really no promo. They want this thing takes off on its own. And that's when they really want to jump on the bandwagon. And that's how Alicia Keys got stuck. That's how all these big artists, you know, I see too many artists. I have them on my Friendsville page, you know, that were cut loose off of, you know, Diddy and, you know, all these other people. It's like, are you serious? You know, you fell for that. But mistakes are going to be made in this business. Make no mistake about it. Management or no management, mistakes will be made. To err is human. It's going to happen because you're going to come across situations that are not always, that you're going to know about or that you're going to see coming. You know, it happens every day. And, you know, it's just part of the business. So, yeah, mistakes are going to be made. Nobody's going to call you stupid. You just learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just cut in right here. There's another caller on the line. Let's bring them in. The caller from the 504, you're on the air with John Green, Elizabeth from LaRue Entertainment, and Josh from Lynx Records.
How y'all doing? Hello. John, Elizabeth, how y'all doing today?
Who is this?
That's good. That's great.
And who are we speaking to?
Oh, okay, yeah. I think you might want to know that. My name's... I'm Kirkland. I'm a photographer slash songwriter slash producer slash a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Calling into y'all.
Okay.
So Elizabeth, this is
the gentleman that you want to have take your picture.
Yes, I know.
So are you like some type of
water
or something,
here, lady?
I didn't know anything about that.
I was like, I thought Elizabeth was in Seattle. Turned out she was all the way in Tampa.
All this time, huh?
Yeah, I did. And then I told her you were going to be in Louisiana
right
in October.
Right.
She wants to do an alter ego shot.
Oh, I mean, those are real awesome. I mean, I have two websites. I just set up one of them specifically for alter ego photo shoots specifically.
Wow.
And that one is, I might as well plug it, is going to be www.kryptonianphotos.com, which is strictly alter ego.
Hold the phone. This is, you're the guy from Kryptonian Photos, huh?
Yes, sir.
You know what, brother? I need to commend you. And I've seen some of your work recently. Lady Flavor put something up, and I was able to peruse your wares. Wow.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it. I really have a passion for it. So,
I doubt if you have a lens large enough to capture my alter ego, but hey, you know what?
What would that be?
You might make it to Detroit.
Yeah. What would it be? What is your alter ego?
It's somewhat King Kong-ish.
Wow. I tell you what. Look, I have an idea already. I can catch you in an alter ego shop where I can make you, like, seem like you're real, like King Kong, like large scale, like knocking over buildings, and the people running around on the streets are going to be little bit of you.
It looks like you need to fly to Detroit so you can make it happen.
On your show, maybe.
I know. You know? Wow, you do some very amazing work.
Too.
You know, that is good, but I mean, I've been looking at your work lately, and wow, I am becoming a large fan.
Thank you, man.
That's awesome.
Well, I asked Kirkland to call in today, and you know, yes, he's an absolutely amazing photographer, and he has shot some of the, you know, some absolutely amazing, you know, beautiful people, you know, here in the Pacific Northwest and down in the Louisiana area where he's from. But on top of that, you know, he is a producer. You know, he's got an absolutely amazing singing voice. So, you know, not only can he make you look beautiful, Elizabeth, he can woo you with his voice. But, you know, so he's kind of like, he's a writer. He's kind of an all-around artist. And I know that we're talking about music right now, but I know that when I met Kirkland face-to-face when he moved here to the Seattle area, you know, I was playing some artists for him. And he helped me have a different ear as to how to listen to the music. And that's the one thing that I appreciate about the blessing that comes my direction is that, you know, God opens the doors for a variety of people to come into my life that help educate me. And Kirkland might not even realize that he helped educate me in that arena as far as, you know, how to listen to music. You know, but I think that, you know, so you know that Elizabeth LaRue is from LaRue Entertainment, and she manages LaRue from right, who you've met. You've been to his, you went to his album release party, right?
Yes, I did. He's an awesome artist. I really like him. I do. Yeah.
And then we've got Josh on the line, who's from Lynx Records. He's out of Tacoma, Washington. And before I go any further, I have to tell you this thing about Lynx Records, okay? When you talk about, like, doing it big, you know, they showed up to my birthday celebration with the entourage. They came with their groupies to, you know, their sound man, to their publicist, to... Yeah. They came with their own wireless mic.
Oh yeah.
A videographer. I mean, they must have had a good dozen people that walked in the door with their team. But you know what? It was a good look. It was honestly, I was really impressed, you know, because that's the first time that I've seen anything like that. You know, so I was really, really impressed with, you know, how Lynx Records, you know, handles, you know, going out and, you know, having their artists perform. They had Tap Tap Real and Fox TBR perform, you know, for my birthday celebration. So I just had to put that out there.
By the way, we just jumped from number 17 to number 13 in New York, by the way.
Okay.
That's a TBR track about no one.
Okay.
You know, we're number 13 in New York. We're down in Atlanta, L.A., Vegas, we're here. I mean, we're really trying to do it big, you know. I mean, it's important. It's not a game to us. You know, it's serious. We put a lot of money and a lot of hard work behind it, you know. So thank you, Lady Flavor. I appreciate that.
Well, I have to, Johnny has been very, very supportive of myself back in the days of Flavor Coffee House. You know, he used to come and visit me, he and Josephine, and he'd bring me Tap Tap's music and posters
and this and that. And so I've been very aware of Lynx Records and TapTap for a while. So I was, you know, it was a pleasure to have TapTap and Fox on my radio show as an interview, but to have, you know, the whole Lynx Records crew, you know, out to help me celebrate my birthday. That's amazing. But I just wanted to put that out there, like, you know, when it came to, you know, like this production, my birthday party was just a birthday party celebration, you know, but they came out big, you know, for that. So I imagine that's what you do when you go to other performances. You know, it's a very, very professional look.
Yeah, but I think that we got some serious windage or something going on right here.
Yeah, some type of feedback going on. But so one of the conversations that it looks like going back and forth in the chat room between Sandrine and Lady Blue, who are both poets and spoken word artists. You know, Sandrine she has a new book that is out. Lady Blue has got also a published book, and you know, I almost call Lady Blue a storyteller. That's more so what I call her style of a spoken word. She's a storyteller, very, very thoughtful, you know, in the messages and things that she shares and performs it through her words. But they're talking about, like, management. Like, at what point do you need management? I think Lady Blue, I read up earlier where she made a statement of being, you know, kind of lazy on the end or whatever. I think that it depends on where you at in your art, where you want to go with it, and how much you've invested and put into it. And I'm not saying as far as money, but, of course, money's going to come into play. But invested in time, getting out there promoting, pushing, this and that, to know whether you are at a point of needing a manager, correct?
Yeah.
Correct. Well, I think that as far as management and getting to the point where you might need management, if you see, here's how I feel about it. I don't believe an artist should ever really go out and ask for anything because they're putting themselves in a position of somebody else has the power and somebody else can tell them no. Now, me as a manager, you know, I don't mind getting a no. I'll take 1,000 no's if I get one yes. It doesn't hurt my feelings.
Nope. Waiting
you know
on
I mean?
A student to get out of school.
But if you're putting your heart and soul out there, like you're talking about spoken word or poetry or music, it doesn't matter.
Entry day. Okay, thank you.
I think it's important, you know, that the artists don't go out there and put themselves out there in a business sense because, you know, if I'm a promoter or anybody in power and you're asking me to either do a show or asking for, you know, a literature deal or something like that, you know, I want to speak to somebody who knows the business. I don't want to speak to somebody who's, forgive me for saying it, is ignorant about how all of these things work. You know, I want to speak to somebody's representative. Because if I tell an artist, and I have done it a bunch of times, and saying, I'm sorry, we can't sign you, you know, their heart gets broken, and you can see it in their face. You know, and you can feel the vibes. And you don't want that. That is not a professional way to present yourself or your brand, whatever that brand may be. You know, so if you're actually, you know, so if you're, you know, trying to do a thing at Starbucks or something like that, I don't think that's such a big deal. You know, as an artist or a poet, you know, just, you know, go out and talk to the manager at Starbucks. It's not that big a deal. But once you're starting to actually build up some buzz, once people are kind of know who you are, at that point, you know, when you're ready to move on to bigger things than a Starbucks, that's, you really need a manager. You really need some sort of management. And furthermore, not every manager is a good manager either.
Exactly.
You need somebody who actually knows what they're talking about, somebody who's actually done these things, that's actually booked shows, that knows how to present themselves in a certain light.
you know, that's not going to use a whole bunch of slang and the N-word and, you know, F-bombs and stuff like that when they're representing your brand, you know. Because I've seen it. I've seen it so many times, and it just, oh.
Yeah, you and me both.
I like this guy.
You know?
I like this guy already.
Well,
you know what, Sandy? We had this conversation before, though. What he had just said, we went over that, you and I both.
Right.
And everything that he said was basically said verbatim. So it you know, I have to get a nod up to that also. It you know, he hit everything right on the head. Enough said.
Exactly. There's another caller on the line. I just want to check. They don't have their hands raised, but I'm just going to check if by chance they are wanting to come on the line. Caller from the 610, you're on the air with the Artist Roundtable. Too many people to list. Are you wanting to speak up and join in?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Who is this?
Hi, this is Lady Blue. How's everyone this evening?
Hi, Lady Blue.
Hi, Lady.
How are you?
Well, I'm listening. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say, this is Lady Blue, who was in the chat room, and I had mentioned that she is a spoken word artist or, you know, poet, but I call her storyteller, and I think she appreciated being called storyteller. But anyways, this is an absolutely amazing woman, you know, many, many life experiences and stories to share. But I'm so glad that you called in, Lady Blue, because you were typing so much in the chat room, and I just wasn't able to keep up with the chat room and the conversation going on the air. So why don't you introduce yourself to the people on the line?
Hi, again, I'm Lady Blue, and I guess my dilemma is I really think that I'm more than a poet. I kind of got caught up in the poet because I do a poetry blog talk show, and but it's really hard for me to market myself because I guess this really was not my intent. You know, I wouldn't seek a manager because I don't expect to make the big bucks and the $1 million and all that kind of stuff. If I can make just enough to sustain me so that I can keep doing what I'm doing, I'm satisfied. But what I have been doing is I have a program that I wanted to present that encourages children to write because writing has been so therapeutic for me. So the marketing of my work is not, how can I say, it's not that it's not important, but it's not mainstream to what I want to do. I would be happier being known as a teaching artist to help motivate and encourage kids than I would want to be known as a poet. So I guess the bottom line is I was listening to learn because I have to be really, really honest. The marketing part bores me to no extreme, and it really does. And I would need, if I wanted to get into that part, there was some compromise, and I'd would probably have to make, which I would not be willing to do in terms of my spiritual belief and what I will or won't do and where I will or won't perform and, you know, all that kind of stuff that goes into marketing yourself commercially, which I wouldn't be that interested in. But what I would like to know in terms of promoting a concept that you have, how I would go about doing that, because I have a concept that I call Practicing Love is the Plus, and my show is called Poetic Minds Plus, because I want to include everything, but the plus stands for Practicing Love Under Stress, because the children that I do get an opportunity to work with are children that are like myself, in that they've had it hard coming up, and, you know, ignorance, not because of lack of love of anything, just not having better environment and better teachings, have been kind of lost in the system, you know. And my thing is to help them to write it out instead of fighting it out. Now, that I would like to promote more in the schools and different centers, more so than I would my own work.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's
wow.
Why I don't have the energy in terms of the research required and all that kind of stuff, because it's not so much about promoting me. My work, I appreciate it so much, and it serves such a purpose for me that I am just happy when other people can relate. But unlike most artists, I write for me. And they say that's very selfish, but I really do. I write for me, so when someone else can relate to what I'm talking about, I'm really grateful, but it serves a purpose for me. You know, I'm not into, you know, I don't consider myself a spoken word artist because I take very little time to learn each piece. You know, I don't want to spend time practicing how to perform. I want to write some more, you know, and that's just me. So I am an older artist, too, so that may have a lot to do with it, too, that I don't care about performing. And one person talks about reading. I think I read well, and I love reading my work, you know. So I'm just in a whole nother category. So when it comes to the commercial side of it, I'm extremely, I say lazy, but the truth is I'm disinterested. I just, you know what I mean? I want to work with the kids and get my project out there in order to help. So the commercial side really bothers me, but I think maybe I would need a manager just to make me more organized or to make the connections that I need. And like today I was supposed to make a bunch of phone calls, and you know, I just got bored with it, making phone calls to make appointments to get interviewed in order to do my program, not perform.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that everybody does their art for different reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, if I'm hearing you clearly, you know, when you write your pieces, you write that for yourself, and at times you are willing to share it, you know, with us, you know, and the listeners of your show or places that you go and perform. I do know that your passion is the young people. And so if I could talk on that for a minute, there's only 7 minutes left in the live stream of this show. If by chance we do go past the 7 minutes, the people will not be able to hear it live as we're recording, but it will still record the show and go. And then if they come back and listen to the archives of the show, I have to tell you, there was an absolutely amazing response to listening to the archives of the first show. So that was really, really exciting to me. But maybe we could speak on, you know, the responsibility as artists, you know, when it comes to our youth. I know that Lady Blue is very selective of who she performs in front of and amongst because of her spiritual and moral values, and that she does work with youth, and she works with youth in trying to curb their anger and frustrations in lashing out in violent ways to turning it into using their words and creativity to express what it is that they're going through. Do you feel that there's any responsibilities of artists when it comes to our young people and what they see and hear from the artists?
Every responsibility. We, as artists of any kind, we have a platform. I won't say every single artist, but I'll say for the sake of us here, each one of us knows an artist that can pull a crowd of 1,000 people. Let's say 500 people. Thus, you have a platform. And whatever you say or sing or do, people will listen or watch or come to it just because it is you. Thus, we have a responsibility to our youth. No matter what, we have a responsibility to our youth, if only for the fact that they will listen. They will listen sometimes to what we sing or what we rap or what we say, more so than they will listen to their parents who reared them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a grand responsibility to our youth, ladies. I'm very big on that. I'm with one of the most famous martial art teams in the world right now. I am with them because my sole purpose with them is because the things that we do get the attention of the youth. And if I can get your attention through some spectacular event that very few men can do, and I can hold it long enough to say something to you, to maybe reshape or re-educate the way you previously thought that wasn't quite as positive as it should have been, then I'll do that. It is worth every bit of blood, every bit of sweat, and every tear to get to them, because you have to be gotten to. Every child is different, everything affects every child a different way. But if you can get their attention, then you can change their mind. It's that's very, very important to me. People
and I appreciate
me,
you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. People ask me all the time, you're a piano player. I mean, you're an up-and-coming artist. You're pretty well-known. Why do you do this? Because this is a whole different field. You might get kids that aren't so big into music, but they love seeing these guys breaking these bricks and running through these walls and fine because I have you. For an hour, I have your undivided attention. Every word I say, everything
right,
I do, you'll watch. So I'll break a ton of concrete in 8 seconds. That's fine. But then I have another 10 seconds to speak to you where I know I have your attention. And I'm going to make sure I use that positively. I'm going to educate or what we like to say, I'm going to breathe on them. I'm going to make sure that what I say is something worthy, you know, because that matters. So for me, yeah,
well,
that's my opinion.
Well,
we have that responsibility.
I think about this a lot, you know, because I work with at-risk homeless youth. At an organization called Friends of Youth. I just recently agreed to become a part of an organization called Unleash the Brilliance, who also works with at-risk youth, and they have a contract with the King County Truancy Court in working with youth to come up with creative ways of reaching them, to kind of encourage them that the importance of education and continuing it. You know, but the other thing that I talk about that needs to be addressed with that is why are they skipping school? There's a core reason as to why, whether it's peer pressure, you know, home situation, not understanding the work, you know, whatever it is. So I had, Lady Blue knows this, I had tried to work with two artists. We had attempted to start a nonprofit called Justice Vision, where we wanted to put together some projects to be able to sell and create a fundraiser. Well, I'm taking my dreams of that particular organization and putting it into Unleash the Brilliance combined with Flavor News to come up with a chat book and a CD. And I'm really, really challenging some of the artists that I'm affiliated with to see if they would be willing and able to come up with, you know, a musical track, a spoken word, you know, piece, or, you know, written poetry, short stories, or lyrics that kind of focuses around the youth of today, the challenges they face, acknowledging what they go up against, but helping them find solutions and, creating it in a way that the youth are going to find it cool and understand, you know, the message that we as adults are trying to share with them. I think one of the things that you know, falls into play when it comes to art. You know, I put this out there all the time on Facebook. Art is very, very powerful, and it has a great influence on how we think and feel. So the reality is the kids are hearing. They're seeing the videos. They're hearing the words, you know, the suggestive messages and stuff like that. And, you know, even though it may say parental advisory on it, come on, the reality is the kids are seeing it. How many are really, really screening, you know, what the kids are experiencing? So,
no, babe. They're not really. You know, parents aren't really involved in that. You know, the parental parental advisory sticker is more like an advertisement for, you know, going to listen to the record than to keep kids away from it.
Yeah. I think it's merely a disclaimer for the companies themselves. But one of my problems is it's true that they're hearing it and they're seeing it, but when you make it okay for them, you're still perpetuating it. Now, I have some angry kids, and they can write as angry as they want, but I don't allow the profanity, and people say that stifles creativity. I feel that because, and it's just my personal experience, I was an extremely angry child, and the more I fed that anger, the angrier I got, and I wouldn't even, I didn't know, this is retrospect, that I look back and realize how angry I was, you know, and it contributed to the language that I used, and it was a screen to back people off, to get my way. Everybody knew I would know not to make me mad, but nobody ever thought, don't hurt her feelings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, 'cause, you know, I come from Harlem, and, you know, it wasn't about being scared of nothing, even though I was a punk to the core. You know, nobody would know that because I come from a tough family and I rode on their coattails too. So I'm saying all the camouflage that we use, and for me personally, cursing is one of them. So I have poets say children hear this language all the time. They hear it at home. And my whole thing is whatever happened to trying to teach them the right way as opposed to perpetuating the wrong stuff that we know they see and they hear. And I kind of stick to that, which makes makes me unpopular in certain instances. But the children that I do work with, eventually realize if nothing else they can't cuss with me, or and they can't send me anything with cussing in it, you know, and if they do, sometimes they don't want to show me, oh, this has got a bad word. Well, let me see the word. Let's see what another word we can use, another way we can say it. But when you have famous poets saying that's the only word I could use to describe that, and that's the word that gets to the core, and that's the word that they understand, and here I come in gray-headed saying no, it goes against the grain, because what I'm asking you to do is harder and more responsible than what the world is presenting to you, and I won't back down on that. You know?
That's beautiful. You should not back down on that. And you know, and a lot of the profanity actually stifles creativity.
That's true.
You know, because you're not thinking hard enough. You're not using your brain. You're not using, you know, every single resource that you can to get your message across. You're just settling for good enough with the F word, you know, or something like that. So I really, really respect that. I think that's great that you're doing this for a kid because it's so important.
I've had the opportunity to work with the Partners in Rhyme several times, and in their workshops, a lot of the youth come to me and say, hey, will you read this? And I'll read it, and it's chock full of profanity, and I'll give it back to them, and I'll tell them. And I always use the same thing, and well, until now, once they hear this, they'll catch on. But my strategy is the same. I tell them, that's straight, man. Now, do me a favor. Convey this exact same emotion to me with none of these profanities. Your mission is to make me feel the same thing you made me feel reading this piece of work without the profanity. That's your grade. Can you do that? Because that's the real work there. There is no profanity in any of my music. The hardest music I have, darkest night, there's no profanity. It's just my way. I don't choose to use it because I feel my vocabulary is extensive and I don't need it. I can convey the exact same emotion without it. Plus, I think it shines a negative light on it. I mean, I'm not real big into that. I don't like to hear it. I don't like to see it. You know, when people approach you for the first time, their first impression is everything. And if the first thing, you know, is for shizzle my nizzle, can I hook up J.O.B., whatever, I'm kind of, you know, for me personally, it doesn't shine a positive light on what they're trying to accomplish. If your first impression of me is, you know, every other word is some bit of slang, or I'm it's almost as if I'm cursing you out indirectly.
Yes, it really is.
So for me, I don't really appreciate it. And that kind of turns me off, and I've probably disassociated myself with a lot of really talented people because their first impression was, man, this guy's kind of coarse, you know. I'm not really feeling that. But he might be brilliant. But I never took the time to listen because what I heard was, you know, abrasive.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry.
That's
just me.
I'm sorry. I'm going to intervene here for a hot second, Lady Flavor.
Okay,
to a certain degree, I mean, for the most part, I do agree with what's being said. Mm-hmm. Okay. But case in point is that most hip-hop artists that I have encountered nowadays are going to have some type of profanity somewhere in there. I will let that slide. But on the other note, I will make them a deal. Like, this is all a compromise thing as far as management is concerned. I have to say to them, okay, it's my responsibility. Look, if you want more exposure, if you want, you know, radio play, give me something that I personally can work with, that the DJ can work with, that the radio stations, that the promoters across, you know, the world can work with. We cannot promote what this track is. We're not going to even do that. If you want that on an album, then that's your prerogative. Oh, well, it's good. But that's not what I'm going to be promoting, okay? Let's choose another track. You know, let's try to tweak this a little bit. Make it radio friendly. Make it, you know, everything but that. So if they're true artists, they would definitely have that already in plan. You know, that,
yeah,
we can make a radio friendly, but there's explicit lyrics, you know, and mm-hmm. on the other side of it. So artistically, you know, it is what it is, but as far as management is concerned, and a lot of managers feel the same way, give me something that I can work with. I can't work with profanity.
I see the people all the time asking Lady Flavor, play my track, Lady Flavor, play my track. Then you get the track, and it's as if they just pulled it off the gutter. And she posts every other day, if you want me to play your music, send me a MP3 that is radio friendly. I've seen that post 50,000 times.
I see it too. And that's amazing that they had the audacity. Some of them even call themselves artists. If you are truly an artist, you know the different language you do have. Like I said before, we have to be multilingual. You have to be multilingual. Profanity is not the only way to go, you know. And it might be good for internet radio, but, I mean, seriously, you know, where are you going to get your royalties from? It's not really, you know, I mean, internet radio does have the royalties coming in nowadays, but really the album sales, because if you can work with somebody and put out a track that is gonna entice the 13-year-old to the 64-year-old, you are good. You are an artist. You know what I'm saying? Because from those age ranges right there, from 13, because when my son was 13, I wish he would bring up an explicit, you know, lyric album into my house. That was not get ready to happen. You know, but at 18, you know, he's going to set his own boundaries now if he's, you know, pulling in his own money and paying for it out of his own pocket. So, you know, but that's not to say that he's going to use it, because I've never seen my son, you know, go ahead and bump those beats and those lyrics in my house. You know what I'm saying? It's a respectability kind of thing. So, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in a little bit on this, too, if you don't mind. I'm sorry to cut you off. You know, now, see, from a management perspective, I don't really mind, actually, the cussing and stuff on certain tracks. Now, I think a lot of, you know, as far as grown folks, you know, I mean, I don't mind that. As far as kids and stuff, I think it has to do with a lot of posturing. You know, they're trying to be perceived in a certain light. They're trying to be harder than they really are. You know, they want to be, an artist that's, you know, that's really from the streets and from this. And it's a lot of posturing, you know, from our youth. And we want to make sure that they understand that it's all really just BS, you know, when it comes to all that. You know, that, you know, even though you might be seen in a certain light, there's good and bad things that come with that. You know, it's not all gravy when you're, you know, cussing on this track and, you know, using the F-bombs and the N-words and all of that stuff. I mean, it's not all good. You know, it really
sounds funny.
The other problem with that, though, is, you know, to give my own experience, when I was young, I wanted to get grown real fast so that I could, and these were my ambitions, right, so that I could gamble, cuss, and smoke and drink outright. That looked like fun. That was being grown. I felt being grown, I'd be able to do any and everything I wanted to do. I wouldn't have any restrictions, because some of the stuff I was seeing that I was not allowed to do, grown folks did it. So all I can say was it looked like you had to be grown to do what you want to do, okay? You can fornicate, you can cuss, you can drink, you can gamble. You could do all those things grown, and it was okay. So for me now to say it's okay for grown-ups, kids do what you do, not what you tell them. And my mother used to say, you do what I say and not what I do. I've come to realize they do what you do. So you can't tell me that this is not okay For me, you know, it's like, you know, you don't want your young children to go out there and have sex and be, you know, and all that kind of stuff and be unmarried. But meanwhile, you got a boyfriend that you're living with, okay? You tell them
right.
It's not good to smoke, but meanwhile, you're smoking cigarettes. So what you're doing, if you're not setting an example as an adult, is just saying you're not old enough. That's the message I got. You're not old enough. And once you're old enough, quote unquote legal, you can do anything you want to do. And what they need
well, that is,
for
that,
early,
that is human nature. That's human nature.
But what
are.
I'm saying
it,
is
it
we
is
need to
nature.
Teach them as early as possible that everybody's got some kind of laws and rules that they have to follow and should follow throughout life. Being an adult does not give you the liberty to do any and everything you want to do. And once you put that in their head as kids, it's very hard to have them. And I'm not saying all kids, but kids that were brought up in environments like mine, where I didn't like my stepfather worked hard and didn't make any money, and the money he made, he didn't even have to claim all of us. You know, I like the number runners. I like the hustlers. They just better than him, and they had more money than him. You know, nobody took the time to show me this is a hardworking man, and he makes provide. It was not exciting and it was not glamorous, and what I'm doing now is not perpetuating wrong behavior as glamorous in any form. That's
I can get with that on that tip. I really can. You know,
and it might not affect all kids like it affects me, but I can only go by my experience.
Right. And everybody's situation is different. You know, like in my environment, I grew up in this industry. But that's to say, you know, when you grow up inside the music business from way little, you know, and you see, you know, everything that goes on around you, you know, I mean, that's why I don't drink to this day, because I've been to the superstar parties. I've been, you know, and my uncle worked for Motown, you know, we're talking, you know, I've been there.
Hey,
so
Motown.
I'm like, okay. Yeah, you know, I mean, that wasn't acceptable. I mean, my parents did it as well. You know what I'm saying? But it was, I knew inside of me that wasn't what it was all about. It just had to be more to it than this. And it's really okay not to do this.
I'll have to say, bid you all a fair adieu. It's been an honor to speak with you all. Lady Flavor, it's been amazing as usual. But it's time for me to ride.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to have to second that. I got an appointment that I got to make in about 15 minutes.
And we have gone into the archives, so I do appreciate everybody, you know, coming out, you know, and sharing your thoughts. And, you know, and I also do honestly appreciate the conversation we've had in the end, you know, talking about, you know, the responsibility of artists and language that's used and this and that and how it works in the industry or how it doesn't work in the industry. Because I think it's something that's honestly, if you can't tell from my postings on Facebook, it is something that's very important to me. Because I think, again, you guys as artists are part of the industry and you're much more powerful than you even really realize. You know, I could listen to one of John's songs and just be in that mood of being a family and hear him sing about his son, and it'll take me, you know, it'll take me in the direction that I need to go to. Or I might, you know, be in a mood of just needing to feel empowered and that I need to make change, and I listen to Rise Up by LaRue. You know, so I don't know if artists really, really understand the powers of what it is that they create and what we experience from them. But I want to thank everybody from Elizabeth at LaRue Entertainment in Tampa, Florida, to Josh with Link Records in Tacoma, Washington, to John D. Green out of Detroit, Michigan, and let's see, who else? Lady Blue out of Pennsylvania, and Jace had called in from Black Stacks here in Seattle. Kirkland, he had to get off the line from Kryptonian Photos. I want to thank everybody that came out to participate in this online conversation and to those that came out to listen to the show in the archives. Now, I want to kind of keep this going, you know, on a regular basis. I think that the conversation is important. I think there's so many areas that we can talk about. So just before everybody hangs up, what are your feelings on the Artist Roundtable?
I think I'm ready for the next one. You know me, Lady Flavor. I'm in.
So how often do you think that we should do it? And
every
what
other
do you
Monday.
Think is a good time? So you think every other Monday?
Every other Monday seems to be working. I mean, you have look at all the interesting people on there today.
Right.
I mean, it has grown since the last Artist Roundtable. So I think you're on to something good here.
It did.
And now we got producers on. You got management on. So you have the full spectrum now. That's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. I mean,
well,
that's what we need. I mean, this is what it's for, right?
It is. It's for you guys. You know, I try to spark. You know, I put out questions or comments, and I think people are asking me that, you know, think that I'm asking it for myself. Basically, when I put out these questions and comments, I kind of have an idea or answer. I want to see what you guys think and feel, you know. So when we have these kind of, you know, conversations on Facebook to sidebar conversations on the phone or chats or whatever, I just thought this was a great way to bring it to the table, you know, here online where people can actually have conversations. And there was some great networking that took place on the last show, and I hope that there can be some great networking taking place on this show today. So everybody that is on the line is on Facebook. If you want to connect with somebody and you can't remember, you know, just reach out to me. I'll send you their page, you know, so that you can connect with them directly. So I will go ahead and set up this show again for not this coming Monday, but the following Monday. And, you know, if there's an interest in doing an evening show, we can also set that up too. I'm open to this because I believe in, you know, in growth. I believe in, you know, taking things to the next level, and I believe in education and sharing the information. So with that said, now that we're into the archives, I want to thank everybody, you know, for participating and making this worthwhile. And, you know, let's just keep learning and growing and sharing.
Thank you for offering this support.
All right. So I will say goodbye. And
you have a good one,
everybody. All right. Goodbye now.
All right, guys. Bye.